We all want, you know, a Ferrari of a podcast to just come out and go a million miles an hour, and Oprah's going to come out of retirement, and, you know, we're going to be on all the news stations. And it just, that's just not the case. I said, but on the other hand, your podcast is a lot like a locomotive, the old steam kind. And if you ever watch those things, the wheels start so slow and they're chugging along. I said, but after a while, when they get going, they have those big pointed things on the front. We call them cow catchers here. And the reason for that is those things don't stop on a dime. They've got a lot of momentum going. So it takes a while to get going. But once it gets going, it's hard to stop.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. Yes, it's that time of the week again. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Dave Jackson. He's the founder of the School of Podcasting. He's also host of the podcast with the same name, which he's been running for 13 years. He's the author of More Podcast Money and an expert on all things podcasting. He's helped hundreds of podcasters launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. Now, I've been following Dave for several years and am a regular listener of the School of Podcasting podcast, and I was really looking forward to this episode, so I'm really excited to share it with you today. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, just click on the blue Take a Peek Inside button. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, and especially for you, my podcast audience. In our discussion today, Dave talked to me about starting out on the podcasting journey by getting really clear on who your audience is, where they are, and making friends with them. We talked about the importance of engaging with your audience and building community. And we talked about how you can use a podcast to gain access to your favourite sporting team. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Dave Jackson. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Cleveland, Ohio in the USA, Dave Jackson, who's the founder of the School of Podcasting. He's the host of the podcast with the same name, which has been going for 13 plus years. He's the author of More Podcast Money. And obviously, as you can tell by all the information he puts out, he is an expert on all things podcasting. He's helped hundreds of podcasters launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Dave. It's a great privilege to have you as a guest.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. This should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Now, if you need any help with podcasting strategy, with equipment recommendations, with technology, then Dave's the man. I've been following you for several years, and I am a regular listener of the School of Podcasting podcast. Tricky to say that one, where I've learned quite a lot. And I've gotten many tips that we use in our own podcasts. And I'm really looking forward to exploring the topic of podcasting and using podcasting for marketing and for education with you some more. Before we talk a lot about podcasting, though, let's find out a little bit more about your background. So when you were a young child, what did you want to do when you grew up?
It was funny. On one hand, I knew I just didn't want to wear a suit. That was kind of like checkbox. Anything that didn't require a suit. And my dad was, he had an electronics background, and we had all sorts of radios and busted TVs. Everybody's thing would break, and they would bring it to my dad. So I had all sorts of tube testers, for those of you that remember tubes and things like that.
Yeah.
So I always thought that I would end up being a technician, and actually started down that path. My original degree was in electronic engineering, and I thought I wanted to fix stuff. And then I found out that when you're a technician, everybody you deal with is upset because their stuff is broke. So I was very happy when I got to pivot and I went into training. But originally I just was like, hey, as long as I don't have to wear a suit, I'll be happy.
Interesting. So you went into training, and you were a very early adopter of online tools when the internet first started. I know you said in one of your about pages that you were training people on the use of the internet in 97, which must have been the really early days.
Yeah, it was. I used to teach classes on how to send email because nobody knew what it was. I used to teach a class on how to surf the internet. And this sounds really weird to say. This was before Google. So you had Hotbot and Lycos and all these other different search engines before Google came in and took over, because people just didn't have a clue what it was. So it was a lot of fun. And then just over the years, I learned to make websites. I actually taught Microsoft Front Page, which doesn't exist either. You know, everything I used to teach doesn't exist anymore. But I've always found myself in kind of that, again, the technical side of me always kind of comes through. That's definitely a part of me that you know, has an itch and I like to scratch every now and then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember discovering the Google search engine very early on. And like you say, there are a lot of others around, Lycos. There's one that had a man's name.
There was Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves, that's right. I used to use that quite a bit. And I was never happy with any of them.
No.
Because you did a search and then you had to do so much more work to actually find what you were looking for after you'd done the search. And I remember discovering Google the first time, and of course, it's history now. That's completely changed the world, and it's kind of changed those of us that might be teaching people how to use all these other difficult to use things.
Absolutely.
So when did you discover podcasting first?
It was late 2004, and a friend of mine had gone to some sort of marketing conference, and again, to somewhat date myself, I had missed the MySpace boat. I mean, I had a MySpace page, but I was very much a late adopter of that. And he came up to me and he said, hey, you know how you missed the MySpace boat? And I was like, yeah, don't rub it in. He goes, well, I just was at this event and the next thing is going to be podcasting. And I'm like, what's a podcasting? And I remember I Googled it and there was 1.5 pages of results. That was it. It was really, really brand new. And so when I finally kind of pieces parted one together, there was an old software called Juice, and it had a giant picture of a lemon on it, and figured out what an RSS feed was and created one of those. And when I kind of uploaded my file up to a host and then saw it come down to the software, the light bulb came on and went, oh, I see what this does. And I think probably the thing that really got me is my first podcast was for musicians, because that's one of my backgrounds. And I was doing a podcast about how to get more gigs and sell more CDs and things like that. And my very first piece of voicemail came from a guy in Nuremberg, Germany. And so here I am in Ohio, and there's some guy on the other side of the planet that, A, not only found my show, but he likes it. And that's when I went, ooh, this is going to be good. So I could see right there just the power of podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so your first podcast was about music and for musicians.
Yeah, and then my background again was in training, but my original degree was in electronic engineering, and I worked for a company for about 10 years. And this was the first time, but not the last time I would hear, you're one of our best trainers, but we need to let you go because we don't have enough business for you. And so at that point, I went to get a job in training, and everybody said, well, that's weird. Your degree's in electronic engineering. So I went back to school, and I needed something to help keep me in my phone and my car and insurance and things like that. And so that's what it's funny because I always tell people, whatever you do, don't start a podcast to make quick money. And yet I started the school of podcasting trying to make quick money, which was horrendous in 2005 because nobody knew what a podcast was, let alone if they wanted to make one. But that's one of the things I did to kind of keep myself going financially. And while I went back to school to get my teaching degree.
Mm.
Yeah, and of course, the whole principle behind the School of Podcasting is education. And whilst it is a commercial venture, you are really focused on education and going back to those times when it was actually quite a technical challenge to put together a podcast, and you probably made a lot of mistakes and learned a hell of a lot of things that you shouldn't do and how to do them better. And so you're sharing that on the School of Podcasting.
That's it. I'm kind of the crash test dummy for podcasting. I mean, I've got a drawer full of microphones and recorders and things like that. And now I'm happy to basically be, the person that's out there making all the mistakes, and so that you don't have to.
Hmm. So that kind of is a brief snapshot of what you do and why. So give us a bit of a more in-depth look at that, what you do and why you do it.
Well, I think when it comes to podcasting, it's a matter that it is creative. There's really no rules. I mean, there are best practices, but you can pretty much do whatever you want. So there's no rules. So you can be super creative. And then it's a global audience. So that's another plus side, that you're just going to get to meet people all over the globe. And so for me, it gives me a platform to help people. So that's my other itch. And then the fact that it's somewhat technical, I get to play with websites and there's always new tools and things like that. So for me, the fact that it's creative, I get to help people, and it's technical, it scratches about every itch I have. And so that's why I think I've just people, I was in a documentary called The Messengers, and they asked me, they said, when do you think you'll stop podcasting? And I said, the day right after I die, basically. It's like, I'm going to do this till I keel over.
And you might have some scheduled episodes as well.
That's so it.
It might take a little longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Getting a bit more serious again, because that's a bit of dark humor there. Like you say, the beauty of podcasting is you can reach a global audience and you can help people, you can deliver content in all sorts of creative ways. What I'm curious about, particularly in the early days of the School of Podcasting, how did you go about growing your audience with a medium that was fairly new then? I mean, today it's perhaps a little easier, although I'm sure that with the number of podcasts out there, that could be a challenge. But how did you go about growing your podcast in the early days?
It's kind of hasn't changed a whole lot. It's a matter of figuring out who your audience is, trying to find where they are. So I remember I found, again, because this is before Facebook, I found an old forum of ex-radio people. And I was like, oh, these are people that already know their way around a microphone. And a matter of going to conferences. When they eventually came on board, I would do that. I would go to any kind of conference that had people that needed exposure. So if it was an author or somebody like that, I would go to those events. So just networking all the time. And it was painful, because I'd go up and I'd say, have you guys heard of podcasting? And 90% of the time, people are like, a what? So it was just those first couple of years were just education. But I also then, because we're now there's like 550,000 shows. Back then, you're talking about maybe a couple hundred. So the people that were podcasting, we were a really tight-knit bunch. So we would go on each other's shows to promote. So if somebody was listening to a podcast, one of the few that actually found it, and they decided, hey, I want to start one, well, then they would come over to me. So that really hasn't changed. It's a matter of knowing who your audience is, going to where they are. And I've learned the step that once you find them is to make friends with them. When I found that forum filled with ex-radio people, I walked in and I swear I heard angels. I was like, oh, this is the pot of gold I've been looking for. And I walked in. I'm like, hey, I'm Dave Jackson. You guys should start a podcast and yada, yada, yada in the School of Podcasting. And they're like, who is this spamming idiot? And they instantly banned me. So you've got to make that connection first, because otherwise, you haven't given them any reason to think you know what you're talking about or anything like that. So figure out where they are, go to where they are, make friends, and then tell them about your podcast. And that's kind of, unfortunately, that's kind of the roadmap to growth. It just, we're all looking for that. What's that one thing I can do that will give me 10,000 downloads? And, aside from speaking, which I've gotten speaking gigs because of my podcast, it's hard to find that thing that's going to give you a giant bump.
Yeah. And there's just so much gold in what you've just said there, because I think that's a roadmap to any marketing or business. You know, start off to find out who's your audience or your target market. Where do they hang out? Where do you find them? And then build a relationship with them, make friends with them. Don't just go out there and try to sell them on something.
Right. You just look like a big spamming idiot. And
that's right.
And then the thing is, and then what I also do is, if anybody emails me, if they leave a comment on the blog, anything like that, I interact with my audience as much as possible, so that, number one, they may give me a great idea for a new episode. But that really is, if this was a business, that's my sales force. These are the people that are out telling people, hey, have you heard of Dave Jackson? And I just realized that, you know, I was just in Washington, D.C. this weekend speaking with some people, and I met a bunch of new people. And you never know. I mean, this summer I was in Tennessee here in the States, and I had somebody, I'm going to say that was at least 5 months ago, said, hey, you probably don't remember me, but I met you in Tennessee and I just want to let you know. And then here's the conversation. So a lot of times it's hard to tell, because you're planting seeds, but you're not around to see the harvest for months. Hmm. But if you hang in there long enough and keep putting out great content, you know, eventually that will come to fruition.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really good advice. So in terms of podcasting versus other ways of delivering content, what's particularly unique about podcasting, and what do you see as the benefits of it?
Well, the thing I like about it over a blog is you have another tool in your communication, and that, of course, is your tone of voice. Mm. It's hard to do. Like, it's hard to be sarcastic on a blog. You can do things and put things in italics and bold, but it's really hard to get your tone of voice. And so I had a blog for musicians before I had a podcast. And the minute I took that same information and put it into a podcast, it instantly became more engaging, because I went from being words on a page to, hey, there's actually somebody back there typing those words. And so that helped the communication. And in regards to something like YouTube, which is a great tool in itself, but in theory, you're not watching my YouTube video in your car, but you can listen to my podcast in your car. So it's a great way to it was funny. I asked my audience to take pictures of themselves wherever they're listening to the show. So I have people in the grocery store, and somebody's out mowing the lawn, and somebody's walking the dog, and one guy's out doing his morning jog. So it's one of those things that you can kind of multitask as you listen to a podcast. I don't think you can do that if it's a video that really requires video. If you're teaching me how to cook a meal or something like that, where I have to watch how you're cutting it up, or how you're doing this or that, or if you're building something out of wood, I have to watch that. And to do that means you need my undivided attention. So I think that's one of the benefits of podcasting a lot of times, because you can have a video podcast, but an audio podcast, you can kind of multitask and do other things while you're actually consuming it.
Mm, that's. I think that's the most powerful benefit of podcasting, and certainly I spend a lot of time listening to podcasts, and probably I would say 80% of that will be while driving the car or walking when I've got headphones on. So it definitely is a multitasking situation. I've even come across a podcast on photography. I'm a keen photographer, and there's a lady in Scotland that does a podcast on photography that's all audio, and it's really good. So you can actually do visual things on a podcast as well. So it's certainly flexible in that way.
Well, and that's where, if you have something that's very visual, you can actually use a podcast as a tease, because you can give information and say, you know, you can actually absolutely create a video using this tool. It's great. It does X, Y, and Z, and yada, yada, yada. And then you go, if you'd like to see it in action, simply go to mywebsite.com/whatever. And everybody now that's been listening is like, well, I want to see the finished results of this. Mm. So that's a great tool in some cases. If you're trying to drive traffic back to your website, just giving, you know, something again that's valuable, but in the end, for the true power user, if you want to see this, go to my website.
Mm, yeah, really good point. It is certainly a great lead magnet, if you like to call it that, in terms of marketing and directing people to take action to, you know, when you're back at your computer, go and have a look at the blog post, because there'll be links there to other resources that we spoke about here.
Yeah.
So the School of Podcasting business itself is a membership program and training programs, and its idea is to help people set up their podcast or improve their podcasts or make money from their podcast if that's where they're at. Is that a good description?
Yeah, that's a great description of the courses. It's also a bit of a community. One of the things we have is a private Facebook group that when you join, I add you to that. So if you're trying to get some constructive feedback, because we're all there to help each other, because we want not just you as a podcaster to succeed, but we want all of podcasting to kind of rise. There's the old saying of, you know, all boats rise in high tide. So we just know that the better your show is, there's a better chance that one of your audience members is going to go to their friend and say, hey, are you listening to podcasts? You should. They're really, really good. So people will come in and they'll, you know, put up a clip or, hey, which artwork is better, as well as because we have a global audience and we have global students, people say, hey, there was this article here that said this, and did you know about this resource? And I remember the other thing I do live group coaching twice a month, and somebody had asked about Canva, which is this cool kind of free graphic tool. And I'd been playing with it. I was okay with it. And one of the members is like, oh, I've been using this for months. And I just basically gave her the mouse and she just gave us a huge power tool of Canva and all these advanced features that nobody had known about. So we all kind of learned together. And that doesn't always mean the answer comes from Dave, because we have so many people in so many areas and different strategies that people do that you go, oh, you know what? That might actually work for my show. I just need to tweak this one thing about it. So it's the courses, it's a private Facebook group, and then it's group coaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot. Often it's said that people join these membership things for the content there and the training, but they stay for the community. So a good community supporting a membership program is really valuable. And I've been on communities where that sort of culture is quite evident, where people will contribute to a discussion in a way that they'll say, well, actually, I've learned to use this tool over many years. I consider myself an expert. I'm happy to do a webinar to teach you how to kind of use it. So it's really good from that point of view as well.
Yeah, I'm always adding new things to the School of Podcasting, updating tutorials and things like that. But a lot of times it's somebody coming in with a new viewpoint. We just had somebody that wanted to start a podcast for a basketball team here called the Chicago Bulls. And he'd asked them for years, you know, I want to do an official Chicago Bulls podcast. And they just politely kept kind of blowing him off and, you know, maybe later we're thinking about it, but more or less putting him off. So he got really smart. He looked at their major sponsors and went to their sponsor and said, hey, I'm going to do a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'd like you to be the sponsor. I just need you to talk to the Chicago Bulls to get me to do it. So he went to where they're, you know, who butters their bread, and got them to do a little leverage. And I was like, man, that's a great strategy. Well, so he had a sponsor, but he didn't have a show yet. And then he went to one of the top YouTube people that had a really great following, and those two partnered together. So now they have a show, they have a sponsor, and they have the backing of the Chicago Bulls. And I'm like, that's one of the best strategies I've ever heard. So it's always fun when you get a new member, because we all have different backgrounds and different strengths and weaknesses, and we all kind of pull ourselves together. So that's actually one of the most exciting parts, at least for me. Yeah. I mean, the tutorials are great, but you know, I've seen them for 13 years now. So it's just a matter of every time a new software updates, I'm like, oh, I got to go redo the tutorials now. So that's always fun. Mm. But it's the community really is great.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's a great story. I'm thinking, I could probably apply that in a certain situation. So sure. I might have to give some thought to that. I was going to ask you about, you know, the challenge of keeping things fresh in terms of the content on the School of Podcasting.
It's a bit of a challenge. It is because, you know, WordPress is always updating. Audacity, which is a free software that's very, very popular, just came out with a new version. I'm going to say about a month ago, and not a lot has changed in it, but I always like to tell people it's the most up-to-date videos and such. So I'm going to update that. And PowerPress is a very popular WordPress plugin. They just came out with a new version with a couple new features. Now I have over the years learned to make these very short videos, and that way I only have to record maybe one video, as opposed to if I had, you know, one video of 15 minutes, you'd have to redo the whole thing. So now I just go in and fix one part. So that's something along with that. And then now I have I have tutorials on how to get your show listed in Spotify. And just yesterday it was announced that Pandora is coming on board. That's a big audio service here in the States. So I'll have to have a tutorial and, you know, describe how to get your show into that. So things are always changing and growing. So that's one of the things that I've always got my ear to the ground. And that's, again, one of the beautiful things of the community is they'll say, hey, did you hear about this? And I'm like, oh, hold on, I need a tutorial for that. So, and I always tell all my students when they enter, I'm like, here's everything you have. If you see something there that is missing, please let me know and I'll be happy to make a tutorial about it.
Now, one of the things I found really interesting, you've got a lot of podcasts that you do, but on the School of Podcasting, I think, is the one that has quite a lot of music in it. And maybe this is your background as a musician in some ways, but you start off with an intro with background music, and then there's some background music very early on, and other background music as you talk about the different calls to action throughout the podcast. What's your philosophy on that? Because I almost found it, thinking back to radio, it's like as soon as there's background music and not just playing music, it's like an advertisement.
Yeah, I always do that for a couple reasons. And some people go, that's a really bad strategy, to which I go, there's no rules in podcasting.
That's right,
For me, the opening music is it's not copyright free. I'm drawing a blank. It's royalty free music. So I'm able to use it in a podcast. And then there's a company called Music Radio Creative that they created an opening jingle for me. So I just married those two together. And for me, my show, if I could go back, originally my show was only about 15, 20 minutes long. And when I went to these different events and I would find my listeners and I would say, you know, is there anything you'd like to see different about the show? And they all said the same thing. It's too short. And I was like, really? Because like 20 minutes a Dave is a lot of Dave. And so now it's about 45 minutes. Well, that means I had to have multiple segments. So like I have one segment called Because of My Podcast, where if somebody says, hey, Dave, this wouldn't have happened except, well, I have a podcast. I'm like, tell me that story. And I'll have interviews with people. So I just have background music that usually comes in maybe 30 seconds towards the end of the segment, just to kind of signal that, hey, we're moving on to something new here. And it's just a little spacer there. I actually do have advertisements in my show right now. Normally I don't, but I'm getting ready to rewrite the book, More Podcast Money, because that's I'm not sure exactly how old it is, but I know Patreon did not exist when I wrote that book. And everybody's like, hey, Dave, how do you have a book about monetizing your podcast with no Patreon chapter? And so when I started to rewrite that, I was like, I need some real firsthand information. So I went ahead and started accepting some sponsors on some of my shows just to see how things, if anything's changed and things like that. So it really depends. I know some shows don't have any music or any intro. There's a show I listen to called The New Media Show with Todd Cochran from Blueberry and Rob Greenlee from Spreaker and VoxNest. And their opening is Todd Cochran going, good morning, everyone. Welcome to The New Media Show. I'm Todd Cochran. I mean, that's it. And so it's really kind of up to you. I like the energy of it. It gets me kind of pumped up as I'm getting ready to record it. The big thing you just want to avoid is putting any kind of popular music you would hear on the radio in your show. There's a lot of weird misconceptions where if I only play it 10 seconds and if I talk over it, and the answer is no, no, and no, you can't play it, because you need the permission of the songwriter. You need the permission of the person who actually performs a song, because sometimes that's not one and the same. It's actually two people. And then you need permission from basically the person that owns the mechanical rights, which is typically the record label. And you need all three of those. And I there's a guy named Dan Miller. He does a podcast called 48 Days to the Work You Love. And it took him 9 months because, again, even the record labels don't know what a podcast is or what to do with it, at least at this point. And so it took him 9 months of back and forth and back and forth to get a license for one song. So it's still a little crazy if you're trying to go down that path.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's best to use one of the services that provides audio clips where you, for a small fee, you get basically royalty-free use in certain circumstances.
Yep.
Hmm. All right. Now, in terms of somebody looking for starting up a podcast, what's your advice in terms of the minimum they need to get set up?
This is the fun part of anything in podcasting. 9 times out of 10, the answer is it depends. So if it's a solo podcaster, well, you need a, I would prefer either an Audio-Technica ATR2100 or a Samson Q2U if you're on the other side of the pond of the US. Get yourself a nice windscreen or a pop filter, and you're good to go. If it's just you talking into a microphone, you're ready to go. You can use Audacity. I really like the Hindenburg Journalist software. That's pretty nice. But you're good to go. That's it. Now, if it's you and a co-host, then are you going to be doing any interviews with people, maybe over the internet? Well, then you probably should get either a mixer or a USB device. And that is a hard one because it depends on how you're recording it. So it's really hard to say, this is how you podcast. I always just tell people, if you have a message and passion, that's really step one. And then from there, it's a matter of working with somebody who knows what they're talking about to make sure there's a, for a while, there was a package out there. It was $1,800 US, which is not cheap. And so many people bought that, and all they needed was a $60 microphone.
And
it was like, yeah, that will do anything you want, but you're buying a ton of stuff that you don't need. So really all you need to start a podcast is you need one episode recorded. You need a piece of artwork that you can create on Canva or have some graphic artist person do that. And then you need an RSS feed. And usually that's provided by a media host, be it Libsyn, Blueberry, Spreaker, Podbean, or any of the other ones. I would advise staying away from Anchor and SoundCloud and Squarespace. Squarespace is a great place to build a website, not a great place to have a podcast. SoundCloud is a great place for musicians, but not a great place to put your podcast. And Anchor has no business model. They've already lost $14 million because they're not charging anybody, which sounds great, free podcasting, but that's not going to last forever. But those are really the three things you need, an episode, artwork, and an RSS feed.
Hmm. Okay, that's great advice. So keep it simple to start with and just get started. And coming back to what you said earlier, you know, get clear on who the audience is, where they hang out, and how you can reach them, because that's who you're talking to.
Yeah, and I always ask people if they go, I'm going to start a podcast, I go, why? And if they go, well, I want to, you know, grow my business or things like that. Okay, that's good, because now I can shape the content to either bring in more customers, position you as an expert, or things like that. But if you just say, oh, I just want to get my message out there, if I help one person, it's great. Okay, great. That's very nice of you that you want to help change the world. But if 6 months from now, we're doing your podcast and you're like, I'm not making any money at this. And I'm like, you didn't say you wanted to make money with this. We positioned this to get your message out to the world and help save the world. Oh, well, it's a lot of work. I want to make some money now. Okay, well, we can do that. But you have to, it's best if you have your goal and your content in alignment when you first start.
That's important. And you make an important point there, because 6 months down the track, particularly if you're doing one or two episodes a week, it is quite a bit of work. And when the initial euphoria starts to plateau, shall we say, there are times when you have to keep pushing through. And if you're really clear on the why, it helps a lot.
Yeah, it really does. I always say, if you can't tell me the why, you're never going to make it through the how. Because it's that why that gives you that passion and that, you know, the fuel to keep going. Because when you first start out, it's depressing when you start out and you do the math and you're like, look, I don't even think my cousins are listening to this. I've got mom and dad and brother and sister, but I'm missing some family members here. It takes a while to get going. I just did a presentation. I said, so many people, we all want, you know, a Ferrari of a podcast to just come out and go a million miles an hour and Oprah's going to come out of retirement and, you know, we're going to be on all the news stations. And it just, that's just not the case. I said, but on the other hand, your podcast is a lot like a locomotive, the old steam kind. And if you ever watch those things, the wheels start so slow and they're chugging along. I said, but after a while, when they get going, they have those big pointed things on the front. We call them cow catchers here. And the reason for that is those things don't stop on a dime. They've got a lot of momentum going. So it takes a while to get going. But once it gets going, it's hard to stop.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great analogy. I think you talked about that in the latest episode.
Yeah.
The positioning the podcast for the long haul, which I think there's a very important message there because, first of all, it is a long game. And secondly, I think consistency is a really important thing. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's two types of consistency. One is consistency in content. So I've noticed that anytime somebody goes, well, it's Monday, I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, but I always promised you a show on Monday, I stop immediately because this person doesn't know what they're going to be saying, and they're probably just going to ramble on about their French toast recipe, and it's worthless. But that way they'll be able to say, I've never missed a Monday. You have to have consistency in content, but you also, I always tell people to record a couple episodes and then pick your schedule because all the person goes, oh, I'm going to do a daily show, and I'm like, you sure about that? And then they record a couple and they're like, okay, I'm going to do, you know, three times a week. And then I'll check back in a couple months and they're down to two times a week. And, you know, sometimes they'll go down to once a week or even twice a month or things like that. So record a couple episodes so you really know what it's going to take to do these. But when you can, whatever the schedule is, if you stick to it, then people can start to count on you and they start to work you into their daily routine. I have a friend of mine that does a podcast on Wednesday. And right now, she almost went to the hospital. She's not feeling very well. I just talked to her. She's going to be fine. But she didn't publish her show for obvious reasons. And it was really weird to wake up in the morning, go to in this case, I use Overcast on my iPhone, and it wasn't there. And it dawned on me just how that's part of my routine. So when you can do that, you become part of the routine. When you deliver value, well, now you're kind of like a trusted friend. And if you can kind of share little bits about you, then they kind of get to know you. And now they know you, they like you, and they trust you. And that's my definition of influence. And that's, in many cases, what we're trying to get with our podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Which comes back to the point three you made earlier about making friends with your audience.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I had an interesting experience and that kind of highlighted it for me as well. A few years ago, I had a bit of a tumble off my bicycle, another one of my passions, and ended up in hospital. And of course, putting out my weekly podcast was kind of not front of mind at that moment. So I think I missed two. And I actually had people contact me and say, what's going on? Have you stopped podcasting?
See, that's the best. That's what you want. The worst is when you don't put something out and nobody notices. Yeah. That's when you're like, uh-oh. So, yeah, it's great that somebody reached out.
Mm. All right. Well, this has been fabulous. I really appreciate you sharing your insights with us today so generously. I think it's time we moved on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions here. Hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire all our audience to go out and do something awesome today.
All right, I'm ready.
Good. So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I just got back from my first trip out of the country in 25 years. I went to Australia, and here's the thing you have to know. It's not going to be as bad as you think it is. I think it's fear that holds us back. And that then stops us from trying new things. We try to play things safe. So if you realize that it's probably not going to be as bad as you think it is, when you actually try it, in many cases, it's much better than you thought it was. You've got something new that you didn't have before. And I really think it's just fear. We like to stay in our comfort zone. So get out of your comfort zone. And when you do, you'll find all sorts of different ways to innovate.
Hmm. Great advice. So were you at the podcasting event in Brisbane?
Yeah, I went to We Are Podcast 2018 with Ronsley Vaz. And there was Jordan Harbinger, Pat Flynn, all sorts of great people were there. That was a really great event.
Yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't make it. But yeah, sounds like it was good with all the people that turned up. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
It's always, for me, when in doubt, go to where your audience is. If I find somebody that listens to my show, I always ask them, what do you think's missing? What's different? What would you like to see? And so in the early days, they said, hey, your show is too short. So that enabled me to make a longer product. If I could go back to 2005, I had people that would start a podcast and they would say, hey, I like this talking into the mic part. Do you know of anybody that would edit it for me? And in the early days, I would do that because, again, there weren't that many podcasters. So that was one one of my revenue streams. If I were to do that again, I would have not, because now I just outsource it. I'm like, oh, here, go to my friend John or somebody else. I should have set something up to where I got some sort of kickback for that because I'm driving people's business and I'm not getting a thing for it. So, but really, you know, you don't know if anything's good until you get in front of your audience. There's a great book by the comedian Kevin Hart. I think it's called You Can't Make This Stuff Up. And he mentions that you don't know you're funny when you practice your comedy in the basement. You have to get in front of your audience. So for me, any kind of new product or thing like that, you have to get some sort of focus group. You have to get in front of your target audience because otherwise, you know, you don't know. Sometimes they don't know what they need. And it's not until you come in with your perspective that you go, oh, have you guys ever tried this? And they're like, what's that? And you're like, oh, great. And then you come up with this great product.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice to get feedback from the audience and find out where the gaps might be. And certainly you did ask me that question when we first sort of had our conversation here before we started recording.
An example of that is I do a show with a guy who's got 30 years in radio. His name's Eric K. Johnson. He kind of goes by the Podcast Talent Coach. And we do a show called the Podcast Review Show. Well, why did I start that podcast? Because people kept coming to me going, would you listen to my show and tell me if it's any good? And I went, well, that's going to take some time to do because we really go over your website and everything like that. And I'm like, well, yeah, but we're going to charge you for that. So, and that's something that works really well. So that just came about from people going, hey, do you know anybody that does this? And I'm like, me. And then off you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed you actually have a Fiverr gig to review your podcast.
That was one where people asked me about a media host that I'd never played with. And I was like, I need a podcast to test this thing. And I had zero time to kind of do any kind of show prep. I'm like, I need a show that requires no show prep, which is kind of unheard of because that's usually one of the things that gives you the value is all the planning you put into it. And so I came up with this concept of the podcast rodeo show. And where I just found a random podcast, I listened to it and then tell you what I think about it. And then somebody again said, well, how do I get my show on that? And I was okay. And I'd never played with Fiverr. And I was like, no, let's do this. Because at the time when I started that show was only supposed to go a month. That was never supposed to be this ongoing thing. I was going to test this media host and call it a day. And when I announced that, my audience was like, no, this is hilarious. Keep it up. So I've been doing it a while. So it's a lot of fun.
Mm, yeah. And I listened to a few of those. And there's certainly – and it's really an interesting model and a good way to get the points across because I've learned a couple of things in some of the episodes I listened to as well, even though it was somebody else's podcast you were reviewing.
Well, and I use that to point business towards the podcast review show. So I'm like, hey, if you want more than the beginning of your show reviewed, I've got this other thing. And that's actually worked in some cases. So it's kind of a little tease of other services. And then it's just another way to get my message and my brand out there.
Hmm. Yeah, I really like it. Great model. All right. So third question, what's your favorite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
Right now, I am absolutely in love with a tool called Todoist, and it runs on a PC, it runs on your phone, it runs on a tablet, whatever it is. So wherever I'm at, you can look up and say, wait, what am I supposed to be working on? My favorite part is it integrates with Gmail. So if somebody sends me something that says, hey, I can't do this now, can you follow up in a couple weeks? I can go right in Gmail and say, hey, add this as a to-do item. And remind me in a couple weeks. That's the one that really, I was like, oh, it's great. And I just go into Todoist, and when I click on it, it opens up Gmail and takes me right to that message, and I can pick up right where I left off. So that's been something that's really helpful. And for me, I can tell anytime things aren't getting done. It seems like I'm busy. I'm just chasing my tail. That's when I go, wait a minute. I haven't been looking at Todoist as frequently as I should, because I try to do that every morning. Right now, I'm trying to get out of the habit of looking at my email the first thing. I try to look at Todoist and see what am I working on today, and then go to my email and do that later. But right now, that's really been doing that. Between that and Evernote. Evernote captures all those great ideas when you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're like, ooh, I bet that would be great. I'll have to remember to write that down. Well, I just open up my phone, and Evernote, much like Todoist, it works on every type of device. So wherever I'm at, I've got access to all my ideas. And then when it comes time to actually record, I just pull out Evernote and I'm like, okay, here's all my bullet points for this particular episode.
Yeah, well, we're great fans of Todoist here. I can't remember how long I've been using it, but yeah, it's really wonderful, and it's great, the integration with Gmail and the integration with the calendar, because you can actually then say, okay, I've got these five things on that I need to do this week, and you can actually send them to the calendar and automate that by simply assigning a start time to the to-do item. So then things pop up in the calendar. So I really like that part of it as well. And you can tag things. So, you know, there's a whole lot of organizational options so that you can, instead of just having a really long to-do list, you can actually bring up a filtered view that makes it really easy to see, hey, these are the important things right now. So focus on those.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah. And Evernote, I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with Evernote. So I'm not sure, but there's a lot of good things about Evernote. And one of the things, you know, we've been talking about podcasting. One of the things I do like about it is when you're out and about, you can just say something into the phone and record an audio clip into Evernote and then bring that back later on. So you don't even need to fight with the small keyboard there, or if you're doing something else with your hands, it's easy just to record a quick audio clip.
Yep, I do that on a regular basis myself.
All right, so what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track, particularly if you're kind of walking them through launching a podcast?
Yeah, I think number one is to really find out what they want, and that goes back to what's the overall goal. And then it's just a matter of, for me, just outlining the project. Back when I was a technician, I worked on color copy machines back when they were the size of a washing machine. They were huge. And when we went to install one of these things, it was like some sort of, you know, army deployment, like, okay, the IT department will go in and install the network, and this will do this and that, and then they will come in. So it's a matter of really outlining, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's the goal of this. You know, here are the steps we need. And then it's just a matter of saying, okay, so we started off, we needed a name. We've got the name. We've got the website address. Okay, so the next things we're going to need are your equipment. So, you know, when we first start and we set this up, you're just going to have two people in the same room. So you need two microphones. You're going to use a USB interface. You need some pop filters, and you're going to use Audacity. Okay, so let's get that ordered. And then it's just a matter of for me, I've learned, it used to be, let me know when you're ready for the next step. That does not work, because that leaves, one of the reasons people hire me now is to keep them accountable. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of like, okay, I'm going to follow up with you next Wednesday, and we'll talk about how things are going with, you know, this step, and we'll plan the next one. And so it's a matter of just kind of, in some cases, having to nudge people. And there are some people like, look, don't nudge me. And that's fine. You gotta, and again, that goes through the whole setting expectations and things like that. But for me, it's, again, going back to those tools, that's where I can have a whole project assigned to your podcast and say, okay, today this is due. Let's get this going. I communicate, like as you do, using Zoom. And so those are the big things. I think you have to set expectations up front and realize that I try to set up phases. Like phase one is getting everything recorded. Okay, good. We've got an episode. Okay, now let's focus on, now that we have it, let's look at how are we going to launch this? How are we going to promote it? Okay, now the launch is done. You're in all the directories. Okay, great. Now how are we going to grow the audience? And just do those in phases. When you try to do everything at once, it just becomes a giant blur. But if you can kind of break everything into bite-sized chunks, it's a little easier to manage, and a little more focused.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. And also, I think I like the breaking it down into phases. It's a little less overwhelming for somebody that might be on the other side of the project. Often, I'll put my hand up here, often I overwhelm people with information, and breaking things down into phases and keeping it kind of here's step one, here's step two, really can avoid that. All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I would think a little bit, and this is where this is a very American thing, I will say up front, but if you can bring in stories about you. So yes, the American saying, talk about yourself. And I realize that's what we do best, but if you can bring in stories that I'll give you an example. I was doing an episode once about how you really need that passion when you first start up, because that's what kind of gets you going in the early days when there aren't many downloads. And I said, at the time I had a stepson that was 16 years old, and that's the age of driving here. And so every day I would walk in, he's like, can we go driving? Can we get the keys? Can we go? Can we? And that's all that kid thought about was getting his license. And I said, so when you first start off, you need the passion of a 16-year-old who wants their license. And I had so many people in my audience that said, oh, I'm going through the same thing. And then you connect on that as a parent and things like that. So sometimes anytime you can make a point by sharing something in your life. Now you have to be careful with that. You don't want to, you know, talk about things about your spouse or your family that they may not want public, but anything like that. I did an episode once. I was a big fan of Muhammad Ali, the boxer. And when he passed away, I said, you know, this guy stood for much more than just boxing. And here are things that podcasters can learn from Muhammad Ali. And I did this episode, and I had so many people reach out and say, oh, wow, he was my champ too. I love that guy. And this was really great. So it really, it's very cliche, and I hate to say it, but just kind of be you. I know some people that, you know, try to be very professional, and they're going to read a certain way and in a certain voice. Well, if you're putting on some sort of facade, you're eventually going to drop that, and just because it's not natural to be that. So if you're trying to be the, you know, I'm the energetic sports guy, hey, what's going on? And you know, you do that for a couple minutes and you're like, ugh, I'm exhausted.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. So, you know, try to bring some energy, bring your personality. And that's what's really going to make you stand out. And if you don't believe me, think about it. I mean, here in the States, we've got, at any time, 11 o'clock p.m. is typically when all the news comes on. They come on earlier and later, but really all of them are on at 11. And there's at least 7 stations talking about the exact same thing. Yeah, you know, today, so-and-so did this or that. And so why do you listen to one channel over the other? Well, I don't know. They seem friendlier. I don't know. I like this guy. Or, you know, it kind of boils down to personality and their approach and their background. And the more you kind of share that about yourself, it's going to make you different. And the hard part of that is when you do that, that means some people are going to like you and some people are not. And you have to be okay with that. And it takes a little while to do that, but you can't please everybody. And if you try to please everybody, then your show is just going to be a giant ball of blech. You know, you're going to be vanilla to everybody.
That's right. Yeah. There's so much great advice in that. I mean, I think the power of story is really still quite underrated, although there's lots of marketers now talking about it.
Yeah.
And even there's people actually teaching, you know, how you can use story in your marketing. But, you know, we've used story as a human species since the beginning of our existence to relate to one another. So it's a really good way to relate. And, you know, you used a couple of good stories there just to illustrate the point. And I think that works really well. I admire people that can do that seamlessly. I've still got a lot to learn in that. And the other one there about being yourself and about bringing your personality, because the newsreader analogy is really good. And if I think back to the ones that I look at, it really does come back to that. And there are people on those news shows. So when they switch from one presenter to another in a different segment, there are people there that I kind of, you know, all of a sudden I grit my teeth and don't really like that person.
Yeah. Can we go back to so-and-so? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's skip through this segment.
Yeah. So-and-so is off tonight. And you're like, oh, are you kidding me? And that's where they come for the content, but they stay for the host. And I have found that if we go back to, again, the early days when I did a podcast for musicians, which I don't do anymore, but I would have people listen to the musician show from the School of Podcasting. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm like, what instrument do you play? And they said, oh, I don't. I just think you're funny. And I'm like, what? So there are times when they will follow you just because they like you. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. That's flattering.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great story too. All right, so what's the future for the School of Podcasting?
Well, a couple things. As I mentioned earlier, we just had some software updates, so this month I'll be redoing some tutorials. I keep coming up with different programs right now. I just launched a mentoring program, which kind of brings up what we were talking about earlier, where you now can have a weekly phone call with me to keep you on track. So if you're looking for that kind of one-to-one hand-holding and that kind of thing. And why did I create that? Because people said, do you know of anybody that would do that? And I'm like, Yeah, me. Let's do that. I do plan on rewriting more podcast money. That's going to be coming out probably early 2019 is when I hope to have that final edits and things like that. I've already started on it, but I'm still doing some interviews with people and things of that nature. So it will just continue to evolve as podcasting evolves. And as I see, you know, needs in my audience, I create the solution.
Hmm. All right. So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field?
It kind of goes back to knowing who your audience is and doing some research and making sure you have a good product. Again, going way back to the early days when I was trying to get a job as with my electronics degree, I had learned how to make what were then computer-based training. You would burn a tutorial onto a CD. And so I had learned the software, and you would put in the CD, and it would automatically start this tutorial. And it would say, you know, welcome to Dave Jackson, and here's his where he went to school, and here's what he majored in, and blah, blah, blah. And you'd go to the next slide. I think there were three slides in it. And the third one was, it was a quiz. It was like, what is the next thing you should do? A, call and schedule a interview. B, call and schedule an interview. Or C, call and schedule an interview. So it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. And everybody loved it. And it actually did help me get hired. And people were like, you should make these for other people and sell it. And I did zero market research. I was like, this is a great idea. And all my friends and family say it's wonderful. And so I bought a domain. I made a website. Everything was great. And then I did my research. And it was like, oh, wait, other people are years in front of me on doing this. Yeah. And oh, look, they're doing it better and it's cheaper. And that was how I learned to do a little market research. So I think that would be it. So many people with podcasts, I think right now, are starting them without doing any kind of market research. Like, how am I going to be different? Or just getting it in front of their target audience. Because again, if you ask mom, she's going to tell you it's a great podcast, honey. That radio thing is wonderful. You know, you need somebody not named mom to talk about it like you're not in the room.
Yeah, which I think is your pitch for the podcast review service.
Yeah, that's basically it. So,
all right. Well, thanks, Dave. This has been really great. I'm conscious that the time is moving on now. Where can people reach out to you and get in touch and say thank you for all that you've shared with us?
Yeah, everything is out at my website, schoolofpodcasting.com. You've got all the old episodes, but you've also got contact. And if you want to join the School of Podcasting, that's there as well. But everything is at that main site, schoolofpodcasting.com.
Okay. And we'll definitely have a link in the show notes to that. Now, finally, who would you like me to interview on a future Nova Buzz podcast and why?
Boy, that is a great question. I would say, in terms of business, you know, there's great people. I mean, Jordan Harbinger, I just met him. He's got a great story. Eric K. Johnson is another, that's the guy that's on the podcast review show with me. He's got, cause he works for iHeart. So he kind of understands the radio aspect. He's also, now getting into more of the marketing side, I think, from radio, but he's also a podcaster. How many names you want? I can keep naming. Gary Leland's another great guy. Gary is great cause he runs an actual brick and mortar store. He used to spend $100,000 on Google AdWords. And now he doesn't spend a dime because he started a podcast.
Hmm.
So
yeah, that sounds like a great story.
Yeah, he's
well, we might We might get introductions to Jordan, Eric, and Gary from you and have them on a future podcast.
Excellent.
Yeah. So thanks again for sharing your time and your insights with us today so generously. I've really enjoyed this. I've got a whole bunch of notes and I'm going to listen to it again afterwards because there were some ideas there that were sparked in my head as well. I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
I hope you enjoyed that delightfully inspiring conversation with Dave and noted some ideas to take action on. Maybe you learned something to improve your podcast, or if you haven't yet started podcasting, are now inspired to give it a try. There was so much good information in this interview with Dave. I'm glad he really emphasized the importance of knowing your audience really well and beginning your podcast journey, or indeed any product development, with some market research to make sure that there is a need or desire for what you've got to offer. I'd love to know what you took away from Dave's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Dave Jackson. That is DaveJackson. Or lowercase, or one word, innovabiz.co/Dave Jackson. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Dave there, as well as links to the School of Podcasting and the other resources that we mentioned. Dave suggested three people for me to interview: Jordan Harbinger, Eric K. Johnson, and Gary Leyland, each of them inspiring podcasters in their own right. So Jordan, Eric, Gary,
stay connected.
Keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us
and to the InnovaBuzz podcast,
courtesy of Dave Jackson.
So you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love
remember
you
to
leave
visit
us a
innovabiz.co/VIP to access the transformational.
Take some of the ideas
hub,
you've heard today and apply
all of its free and
in
exceptionally useful information
thoughts,
to help
ideas,
you
suggestions
your
or
marketing.
Questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.